The other day, I was out of town, and we've had a lot of rain. I don't know if you guys have had a lot of rain this year, but we have
Yeah,
had
rains every day.
so much rain. But I was out of town, and we had this downpour of rain within, I think it was around 30 minutes or something. But the water came up down the street from us, the low point in the neighborhood. The water came up about 2 feet higher than it had and got over the road. And we're talking like
That's scary.
in the ditch, probably 5 feet of standing water. It was a ridiculous amount of rain. All of our town flooded. We had a bunch of problems. There was a place like in the next neighborhood over where the water was moving so fast that it broke the gas meter off the side of a house and caused a gas leak. Like, I don't even understand how that happens. There must have been some rust happening there or something already, but we had a ridiculous amount of rain. And so our pool was covered in mud. The entire top of the cover, like, I think I told you guys, we have one hill coming down towards the pool and one hill going away from the pool. And
So
we
they
got sawed
passes
down
across
on
it.
the downhill part, and so the sod's getting lots of rain. That's great.
On
The
the
other side,
uphill, it's pulling the
it's
mud
just
across it.
washing out. Completely covered the pool cover in like probably, I don't know, a quarter inch of mud. Just end to end, you know. And the water came in so fast that it filled up the cover, which is about 4 or 5 inches below the concrete, filled that up, dumped it into the pool, and so all of this mud just went into the pool.
Oh, so the mud, I'm thinking the mud can just breeze over. You could just hose it off. It's kind of entrapped.
Well, it normally would, but there was so much water that it lifted it up over the ends of this pool cover. It's kind of like a hammock, kind of think of it that way, and just dumped it in the pool. So we've been cleaning. I would say my wife has been really cleaning. I haven't. Wasn't here, but yeah, we've been trying to clean up after that. And around town is just a mess. Like, just a lot of water in a very, very short amount of time.
There's a small creek down the road from me, and that's how I always gauge because it might not be raining directly over me, but if it's raining up in the mountains nearby and the water is rushing in that little creek, and it's usually about 12 or 15 feet to the bottom of the bridge to the water, and sometimes it's like 1 foot, and I'm like,
Oh, yeah.
whoa. There have been times where it's washed out the bridge. The bridge had to be rebuilt 10 years ago, and that's scary because there's houses all along that creek. And there once was a jug handle in that creek, and it's not there anymore.
A
Somebody's whole
jug handle?
property, like where the water goes like this and comes and does like a big, but it water
Oh.
rushed and cut that peninsula right off, and everything that was on that peninsula is all washed away. There was a barn and everything. That was probably, I never saw it, but I just heard because you could see the property from the street, and you could see the water's right behind it. It used to not be right behind it. The water used to kind of go out and come back in. But with this surge over one of the hurricanes, it all washed off.
Crazy. Yeah, we've had, I think I heard, I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard that Kentucky has had more rain this year than ever before in this spring. And I believe it. I mean, it's just been constant and a lot of rain. And I actually really like rain. I love sitting outside and listening to rain. It's like one of my favorite things, but you know, it slowed down the pool progress and now it's just moving mud. Just every day it moves mud from one place to another,
They
so
say it's rained in New
kind of
England or
overwhelming.
here in New York and Northeast. It's rained every single weekend since November.
Really?
Yeah, this like you see memes. I mean, maybe I get them locally fed to me because of my region, and people keep reminding us that it's rained every weekend since
That's
November
crazy.
in New
Wow.
York State.
That's
At
pretty
least
cool.
one of the 2 days. We had a nice Sunday last week, but in the morning. It was very overcast. We had a beautiful day, though. But
Bob, you
it's going
don't
to feel
makes it
like
hard
this
to
is.
mow. Makes it real hard to mow. What were you
You don't
saying?
feel like it's your fault, Bob? You did. You asked for a pool.
I
You
did.
wanted water in your backyard.
That's a good point. Didn't think about that. Yeah. Yeah. The pool's been really nice, and we have been using it in between rains, but yeah, it's kind of a pain. I'm over the rain. We need to mow the yard very badly. I need to mow the farm, like really badly. It's hard enough to get out there to mow it, especially when it's not, you know, wet. But I was in Chicago this weekend. I'm gonna go ahead and jump in and tell you guys what I've been doing. I went to Chicago this weekend. So there was a Lego event, like a...
Oh, I saw your post about the all the...
I don't know. It's not a festival. It's like a show kind of convention thing called Brick World. And they happen all over in different places. But my oldest son wanted to go to... that was one of the things he wanted to do this summer. So I took the three boys up for the weekend. We went on Saturday, we drove up there, spent the night. And then on Sunday, we went to this Lego show thing. And basically, it's like user groups or individuals who build custom Lego things will show up. Like, you rent a table or whatever, and then you bring your stuff in. So it's this big convention center, and you just walk around and look at people's creations. Sounds pretty nerdy. It is pretty nerdy. But at the same time, you would be blown away at the art and the engineering that happens with... I mean, just think about, like, Lego as a building material rather than as a toy. And then, you know, you have the system of things that are made to work together, and the engineering in the Lego system is actually pretty incredible, like how well everything fits together and how the mechanics and the electronics and all that stuff, you know, is built into it. And then you have these like highly, highly creative people taking advantage of this system and the material to make things that are just kind of unbelievable. Like lots of castles, lots of big buildings, but then lots of hilarious sculptures and weird mashups of pop culture things. And then these mechanisms. So there's this, I can't remember what it was called. There's this table. It wasn't actually a table. It was about maybe 60 foot by 40 foot square of tables. And each person would build their ball mover thing. So they have these little balls that are about 3/4 of an inch, and it's a standard ball size. It's like a big marble. And you build a machine that moves these balls however you want from one side of your build to the other side of your build. And then everybody brings them and they put them on this table and they connect their builds. So this huge, whatever, 40 by 60 thing is a loop, a mechanized loop moving hundreds, thousands of these balls around the thing the entire time. And so you just walk around this big table thing looking at how people mechanized moving these little balls. And I mean, both of you could spend hours looking at just that one exhibit because it's incredible what people come up with, all of the crazy little, and you know, some of it is like fun, silly ways to move it. Some of it is there was one thing where they rolled, these balls came in from one side, they rolled down this big flat area into this little chute, and then there was this tumbler thing with like flaps or something. I don't really know how it was working, but they would roll down and one ball would get caught in this little thing and it would shoot up about 6 feet in the air, enough that you could walk underneath it. It would shoot up over a gap in the table to the next build and land in another little thing that was concave enough for it to not bounce out from that height. So these two things had to work together, and that was how you got inside this table thing. You had to walk under this constant shooting ball thing.
So did those two guys coordinate, like mine's going to shoot, mine's going to catch?
Yes, or maybe it was the same person made both parts of it. You know, yeah. I don't really have any idea, because there was inside this pin, there were 30 people or something, you know, that were there kind of keep making sure their thing kept working. And
yeah,
but just the creative mechanism in that one little area was unbelievable. And that was one section of this entire convention
center.
Sounds
like a video for you next year.
It was, I tried to take some photos when I got there. Like I started, you know, we started at one side
there next year.
Well, we might. It's not a competition. It's just like a show-off
thing.
But I mean,
you might participate.
Yeah, we talked about it. Me and the boys were all kind of, you know, energized with like, oh, we should just really be creative, because some of the stuff there, it's not like they're not showing off. It's just like, oh, look at this cool thing I made. Of course. You know, it's some small, silly, funny, cool something.
It's just the like-minded situation
for the sculptural stuff.
Yeah.
Is there software to aid in the design of some of these things?
There are. There's a couple of pieces, and I don't know the names of them, but there are a couple of pieces of software that are 3D modeling software, but you're using Lego bricks. Like, you know, you're using components that are already sized that way. So you're modeling and drawing with materials that you can then go buy. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not making your own bricks. You're using stuff that's available. And I think that's what Lego designers that actually work for Lego, I think at some point they go into that software. I don't know if they start there or not, but they build that way so that they can test all sorts of, you know, fit and quantity and volume for the actual material that they're using. So I think a lot of people use that. But there was one guy that was, he had Transformers. You know I like Transformers. You know I like Lego. So Lego actually makes a couple of Transformer branded Transformers, right? And they're things that are about this tall. They're about 16 inches tall or something. And they turn from a robot into a truck. You don't have to take it apart. You just transform it, which is pretty amazing. There's this guy there who has been doing that same thing for like 10 years longer than Lego's been doing it. And he's pretty sure that they ripped off some of his mechanisms. He had this whole table of all these Transformers. And so I was just blown away at how this works. And so I started asking him, like, how do you design something that has to have two states and change, you know, has to be able to physically move from one state to the other? Because that seems like a really hard problem to solve. And I'm thinking he probably has software that helps him figure out. He was like, I'm scared of computers. I don't really do very well with my phone and stuff. So, you know, so then he goes into this long explanation about how to get these two things, he builds skeletons. He takes, you know, this character has shoulder joints and hip joints and whatever joints they have. And he'll build a skeleton that mimics what he knows that it needs to do. And then he'll make two of those skeletons. And one he turns into the vehicle, one he turns into the robot. And then he starts adding pieces to both of them to keep them in sync in those different forms. And at any point can start to work them to the other form. And I mean, when you look at these things, I don't even that explanation does not explain to me how he actually does it, because it's incredible. And some of these Transformers actually have three different modes. In Transformers, there's a set of construction vehicles. Each one of the vehicles has a robot in a vehicle form. And then you can turn them into some other third form, and they all stick together and become this giant robot that's like 2 feet tall or something. And he made those. And I don't even understand how that happens. But so there's stuff like that, that, like, regardless of the fact that it was Lego, just the creativity and the engineering to do it with, you know, it's not for money, it's not for... They're not getting anything out of this other than just the pure, I want to figure out how to do it, or I want to have a thing exist that doesn't exist. That part was really inspiring to me. And it actually made me think a little bit more about hobbies. Because it's so easy, I think, for us, but me specifically at least, to forget about hobbies, forget about things that can exist outside of, like, you know, content and having a purpose. And there's some stuff like that there's a lot of stuff like that, that most people have a creative pursuit that doesn't have to become anything. It doesn't have to just be justified through money.
It's kind of like all three careers.
Yeah. It's weird that our careers, at least for me, kind of replaced the hobby thing. And it also kind of tainted how I think of creative pursuits, because they all have to be justifiable through income. And I think, like, an artist, a real artist, a creative person is creative because they're creative and they just do that thing, whether it makes money or not. There's an obsessiveness to it.
Yeah,
I don't have, I guess.
I feel like I have that obsessiveness. I just sometimes, this is like a little existential crisis sometimes I have. I'm like, I see because of Rachel.
Lay down. Lay down. The couch is right there.
What's that?
I said lay down. The couch is right there behind you.
You got me. Rachel is an art dealer. My girlfriend's an art dealer. So I see art. And I obviously have always been exposed to art. But in this context, I see the other side where it's some of the artists that she represents and people she tries to sell. And the point I'm making is I see how obsessive they are, and it's sometimes the stuff seems like it has a deeper meaning than what I'm doing. And I think to myself, is what I'm doing not deep enough? But I don't really believe that. But sometimes I have this crisis where I'm like, am I just a commercial artist? Am I just a glorified commercial artist? Sometimes I think I am, and it has less depth than somebody that's making these strange things. And then Rachel would be going through like a presentation that she might make to a client, and I'm looking. She's like, look, you could make this. You could make this. I'm like, I can make every one of those things with my eyes closed. But I'm not – I don't have the intention to do that, and I'm not diminishing the value of that art. But what I'm making – what I'm saying is that I'm pursuing this commercial art in the way that we're chasing advertising dollars. But a lot of the time I get locked into something like the shoe. I'm like obsessive about it. You know, this big shoe that I'm making, this big boot, or the house, or the Cadillac. I mean, that this is, I look at my overall career, I guess you could say, the things I made, and I'm definitely as obsessive as some of these artists.
Yeah, I think the difference there, and I mean, I don't know. I've known a lot of artists throughout my life, and I think the difference there is that it's easy for us to compare the end result with other artists and say, like, they're better at this or they do this different thing. But the final art piece, the output, whatever it is, think of music this way too, is downstream from this thing that you can't not do. And so the thing that makes you as deep as another artist is the fact that you can't not make X. And a painter who paints something that I think looks like garbage or something a child would make, it doesn't matter what I think about that because that person couldn't not paint that. They had to. And that's that obsessive thing. You know, you, I know, have that obsessiveness about old things and about mechanical things and about things that
making them
work,
combine
things together. Whereas another person, another a painter, for instance, might look at that stuff and be like, I don't need another, you know, key star thing. But that's a thing that you had to have, you had to make that thing, right? I think music is the same way. But anyway, the depth is not necessarily emotional depth. It is for some people, but I don't think that's the key that makes something valuable, a piece of art valuable. It's the obsession, whatever the obsession is coming from, in my opinion, you know. But that's art, so it's my opinion doesn't matter as much as the artist's opinion, right? That's the whole thing. Yeah. But it was an awesome experience to see that. We had a really good time. We were there just for one day of it. It was like 11 to 3. Thousands of people, too. Like, this was not a small thing. This was a big event. And we got to the end of the day, and we had been through the whole room, but we absolutely did not see the whole thing because you're surrounded 360 by amazing stuff. So you're looking at one thing, and you're missing, you know, 10 other things. And so we got to the end of the day, and we're like, I don't want to leave. And they're like, okay, it's over. Everybody has to get out now. We're all like glancing around like, did we see that? We didn't go see that. We had a really good time. And it was just me and the three boys. So we had a lot of fun. Went and got some deep dish. Went to a museum. We did a college tour while we were up there, which was scary and fascinating.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we did that. Got back late Monday night. But it was a really good, really good weekend for us. Beautiful weather too. Not typical like Chicago. When I think of Chicago, I've spent most of my Chicago time in the fall and in the winter, and this was absolutely beautiful weather in Chicago. So it was cool. That's what I did this weekend.
Nice.
What about you guys?
What did I do? I'm working on this boot that I just mentioned. I'm working on a boot shoe July 12th is a go-kart event. A lot of people keep asking me. I'm not really, I haven't plastered it, but I've talked about it. So July 12th, me, Derek, Paul, and now Musty One. If you guys know Musty. Cool. You know Musty?
Yeah. Makes the engine. I mean, personally, I know who he is.
Yeah, he's a good dude. He comes to the go-kart track whenever he can. He's, so if we've done it five times, he's come four or three times. Anyway, he mentioned me the other day. I don't think he knows by accident this happened. He said, he goes, hey, when's the go-kart? I'm coming. And I was like, oh, July 12th. And he goes, some of us are crazy. And he sends me a picture of this giant high heels shoe seat that we've all seen from the 80s. It's like a big giant high heel shoe, and you sit on the, like where the hump of the foot would be. And it's like a thing we've seen in boutiques and stuff. He's got one of those, and he's building a go-kart around it. So you're going to sit like in the high heel shoe while you drive.
Wow.
And I said, what? Like, what? It's just, I think it just happened. He just saw it, and he thought it would be a funny thing. And then I sent him a picture of the boot. So there's this bizarre shoe theme that's popped up. So did I mention Paul Jackman? We're all making shoes. And so it's going to be interesting. So I'm deep in the resin fiberglass part on the boot is the complicated, time-consuming. So I started it exactly 1 week ago yesterday. And I'm pretty far along, and I still have 3 weeks before, at least 3 weeks before I'm done. And I'm almost out of the woods with this skinning of the I'll send you guys pictures in a minute. The skinning of the foam. And it's going well. It's going
is
well.
That fun? It looks fun.
It is fun. It is fun. But every time you do epoxy, especially on a vertical surface, you brush it in. You brush these pads. And I go back. Let's go back in time to Memorial Day. My friend T has these tent sales every Memorial Day. Sometimes he's used my parking lot at the go-kart track. But he sets up a giant tent. Giant. Like you could put like 50 cars under this tent. It's like a giant circus tent. And he just pulls all his junk out. And at the end of every sale, I always rummage through just like what he's throwing away. Like, hey, I got this double tandem bicycle the other day. He had it this time just down the block, right across from my house. And so I wandered over there at the end of the sale. And he goes, Jim, you want that? He goes, only you could use it. This giant roll of fiberglass matting. And the roll itself weighs about 100 pounds. It's a roll, like the cross section of the roll is 10 inches, maybe 12 inches, and it's 60 inches long. And it's just a solid roll of material. And I threw it up on my shoulder. I'm like, I don't know why I'm taking this. I have no idea what I'm going to do with it. It's like the matting that would be like on the hull of a giant boat. And turns out, 2 weeks later, I started making a shoe. Or 3 weeks later, I started making a shoe. And this fiberglass is so thick. It's almost like a quarter inch thick that I'm cutting it into squares. And I'm soaking the squares in epoxy and putting them on. But on a vertical surface, I got to kind of babysit it and wait till it tacks up. So I put them all in place. And then I'm just sitting there with my fingers the whole time, poking them in. And I got to put on a pair of gloves. I got to cut all my squares, put on a pair of gloves, mix up a batch of epoxy. And then I use that epoxy up and then mix up another batch. So the whole time I have on this disgusting, horribly soaked pair of rubber gloves. And I can't do anything for those like 20 minutes. Can't answer my phone. If I'm listening to something, if it ends, if I'm listening to commercials, I gotta just can't do anything. Can't touch anything. I have the system down so that nothing gets epoxy on it. I don't touch another pair of scissors. I don't touch any tools that aren't just scrap wood sticks. Because if you know, and like when I made the boat, everything gets epoxy on it. The handles to the saw, the switches, everything. So this time I have this very strict policy where once I have rubber gloves on, and if I start touching epoxy, nothing else gets touched. I have to literally just ignore it. Unless I'm like, all right, then I pull my glove off and I keep one hand soaked with epoxy and my other hand like answers a phone call or whatever.
So, and then gets covered in epoxy.
No. I'm very, very, very good. I'm very, very good. If I panic, if I feel a little bit of epoxy, like I made it through the glove because I cut the tip of the finger, I like yank it off. I'm being super careful. So that's this that little weird OCD to make sure that I'm not getting epoxy on my phone or on my cameras or anything. It's I'm working my way through it. But it's coming out good. It's getting heavier. Little engineering problem. So I made this wire frame and I spray foamed on this surface with a couple strips of hard foam. and I got it all glued together with hot glue and spray foam. And then on top of that, I put clear packing tape, and then on that I spray foamed like window insulation from Titebond, this expanding foam. Then I sculpted that, then I'm epoxying that, and suddenly I realized this thing is getting heavy. It's going to rip off the metal frame. So yesterday afternoon, I wenched it up off of the go-kart, and now it's just sitting on horses. So now I'm working on it. But once I get the outside to the point where I could pick this whole thing up and flip it over, I have to go back inside and then epoxy the metal frame to the inside of the structure now. Because right now it's just spray foam glued on. And I'm just afraid the weight of it's going to rip off.
So just to be a child, you said you winched it up and put it on horses. And I immediately thought that how cool it would be if you replaced the go-kart with an actual horse. And so you were riding on a horse in a boot costume. Like,
yes.
Show up to the event like that.
Don't say that, because someone's going to make an AI image of that. Don't say that. I wouldn't want to see an AI image of that.
You wouldn't want to, but somebody should do it.
Nope. Nobody should do it. Well, yeah, so it's coming along. Today I should be able to wrap up all the epoxy. And I just picked up another job from my friends at the Bullet Bourbon team. They need 50 things that have to be done in like a week. And I was like, okay, I'll do it.
Oh.
So that's good. It's good income. So I'll be working on that as well, amongst everything else. Yeah.
Cool.
That's it. Everything's moving along. This happens to be the moment last week.
Go ahead. Remember I was talking about the dowels and the pegboard and the dowels fitting and stuff?
Yeah.
So I did a test with the lathe. And I was able to get it turned down, just the end of it turned down to the right size using the metal lathe. The problem there is that it's poplar. The dowels are poplar. And so even wrapping them in leather and stuff and putting them in the chuck, to get it tight enough to make an accurate cut, it leaves a little impression in the end of the dowel, which maybe isn't a huge deal, but it, like, you got to be really careful because that stuff just... it crushes very easily. I went over to the place and talked to the lady where the panels are already up on the wall. And the good thing is she only needs about half the dowels. I made way more than she actually needs. So that cuts down the number of things I have to fix to, you know, about 50. I had a lot of people message me, a lot of really helpful suggestions over the last few days since the show came out about different ways to make the holes bigger and different ways to, you know, most of the suggestions were about making the holes bigger. And I maybe wasn't clear last week that there are hundreds and hundreds of holes already on the wall in a room that's like 14 feet tall. So I probably won't mess with the holes. I mean, I could if that's if I absolutely have to, but so instead I think I'm just going to figure out the dowels. But had a really good suggestion from somebody yesterday or this morning or something about making a jig for the table saw where you can kind of like roll the, you know, the end of the dowel over that safely, and you can roll it and kind of feed it through to notch the end of it, or, you know, shave the end of it a little bit. Some really cool ideas for 3D printed, like a sanding jig that would allow you to kind of spin the dowel into it, and it would sand it and not taper it, but sand it down a couple of times to get it to the right size, and then you have a fit at the end of it, so you can keep doing that until it fits in the end.
If you 3D print, you know, this, they make these, but you could make one for your exact specific size. That probably is the easiest thing to do. 3D print, basically a pencil sharpener, has a little bit of a taper, so it accepts the width of what it is now, and then it tapers down, but you put a little razor blade, just like a pencil sharpener, and you just spin it into it with a tool. The one, I don't want to be a nitpicky, but the table saw idea is a good idea to taper the end of a thing. But the only problem is if your dowel has this X discrepancy, the little thing that you cut off is going to also have that same X discrepancy. So if your dowels are all various sizes, you're going to cut off the same amount of various sizes when you do it into the table saw.
Gotcha.
Capiche? You understand?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I haven't really thought about how that jig is put together.
I think the pencil sharpener one will be the one that's everything's always the same. It'd be an interesting 3D print design too.
Yeah, Some of the suggestions, it actually did get me thinking, like, this might be a cool problem to solve on camera rather than just trying to get it done.
My buddy Chris McCormick listens, and he sent me a couple of suggestions for you. And one of the things was the pencil sharpener, but I didn't think that you could just make your own. So, Chris, thank Chris McCormick who listens. I'll send you he sent me a dowel maker that you could get on Amazon. It has various sizes in it. But if you wanted to just make your own very specific size, I mean, I think it could be a cool 3D print project. I'll send you that. My phone's uploading to something, so as soon as it's done, I'll send it to you.
I also thought about if you could take, since I have the laser and you can make a really precise hole in steel, what if I took, like, the max thickness of steel and cut that hole in it and then went back and sharpened the top edge and maybe, like, created a little and just twist it in there, you know. And also it's poplar, so it's gonna shave, but it's also gonna just compress. So it could be that I actually just seed it and knock it in with a mallet, and it just compresses the end enough to where it would
it's funny because that's when Chris had a similar project. I'll send you the screen grabs of our conversation. And he had a similar he does huge displays, and he did a similar thing where the wall is like a football field size wall of holes. And he had the same exact problem you did. And what he described, I was a little confused, Chris, with your description, but I think he described something where he had to take all the pegs that he bought or created and then jammed them into a piece of metal to compress the ends, just like you were saying. But an old school woodworker way to make dowels is a draw plate. So if you made a draw plate, which is a series of holes, and you just push the peg through, push the peg through, push the peg through. You couldn't go from 1 to 5, but you can go from 1, 2, 3, 4 to 5. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So you just work your way up or down. Well, you'd be working your way skinnier through the draw plate. So that could probably be a good way too.
Yeah. And I really only do have to do the 3/4 inch of the end of every one. I don't have to do the entire thing, which I hadn't really thought through that before I started messing with it. So when I was talking about it last week, I was thinking in my mind I need to make the whole thing smaller, but there's no reason to do that. So anyway, that's a little update on that. David, what have you been up to?
Can I tell you what I'm not working on?
Sure.
I did not get the Coke machine.
Oh.
So I can't remember if we talked about
in the after show.
Maybe it was in the after show. So I found browsing Facebook Marketplace, I found this. It was like a late 60s, early 70s Coke machine, and it had like a fake wood panel on there, and all the buttons for the different soda cans were replaced with like pieces of, the inside was replaced with like pieces of paper and somebody writing down like Mountain Dew. And I thought, oh, that would be cool if I replaced the acrylic panel with, you know, some sort of artistic thing and the fake wood with real wood. And I sent you guys the photo of the listing, and Bob's like, oh, if you don't get that, I'm getting that. So I was like, all right, I got to do this. And it was like $200, but the dispensing mechanism wasn't working. And I'm like, maybe I'll figure it out. And I found the model number of the machine, started doing some research, and empty, the machine is like over 700 pounds.
Woo! Really?
Yes. And I then just started thinking, that is too much to deal with. Like, even if we got it off the truck, like, I don't have the space for it to just, like, sit for, 4 or 5 weeks to work on. I would have to move it around to get it out of my way all the time. And that just, that was, maybe that's our topic today is distractions, and I'm always looking for distractions, and maybe that was the distraction that I needed to not do the project. But I didn't get it, and I do think it would be a really cool project. So then I thought, what if I did something along the lines of this? So I went to the antique mall yesterday, and I started taking photos and looking at, like, you would see like the old Pepsi, Coca-Cola, cigarette, beer clocks that have some sort of like photo of a cowboy smoking a cigarette, and then there's a clock, and then it's got fake wood, like the panel is lit behind. And so I started taking photos of that, and I went in there thinking I would find one of those and just kind of refurbish it or turn it into a piece of art. And then I thought, well, what if I just make one from scratch? I started taking photos of all these different clocks and beer signs. And I think I'm gonna make my own. And I'll just talk about the journey of how I got here. So that is, and I haven't started it yet, but that's what I'm thinking about. And it totally feels like a Wesley Treat type of project. 'Cause he's really cool. He's
Yeah.
really good at making like the cool retro things. And so, yeah, that is what I'm not working on yet, but I'm gathering information for.
Nice.
So,
Well, that's cool.
I had no idea that these soda dispensing machines were 700 plus, some way even more. So when you start doing research, some are even more.
Wow.
So, just.
I wonder, are they all like that? I mean, I guess it's that heavy on purpose, just so it doesn't, nobody steals it or it doesn't
I,
fall
maybe
over or something. Wow.
I don't know. Yeah. So I didn't get it. And I'm a little disappointed because I have this like crazy vision, but if I had more space, someday I'll have more space. Someday I'll revisit that, but that's where we are.
Cool. There were some people on our Discord that were asking me if I ended up getting one. And I did go look after we got off the show last week. I did look around, and there's quite a few in the area.
I
I could
look
drive
too.
and
There's a
pick
lot
up.
of them. They're cool,
It's
yeah.
interesting though. Remember we were talking about, for people that didn't hear the after show, we spent a long time talking about this. But we couldn't figure out which machines were bottle or can, and it wasn't real clear. Well, it turns out that some machines do both. And so that might have been some of the confusion that we're seeing. But Brent was sending me some listings or asking me about it and stuff on our Discord, and so I have not gotten one. I'm not going to until I finish other things and I have space, which will be never. But I think it's such a cool idea. I hope someday you find one that's a good fit for your space and your time and stuff.
There's a public art show coming up in Toledo in September, and one of my thoughts was like maybe I enter this public art show and this is my only art piece, but it dispenses cans that I turned on the lathe, and each one is like some sort of different art piece. So I was going through
Wow.
this whole thing of like, making it into just a bigger art piece that dispenses art pieces, I guess.
Yeah, that's cool.
So we're gonna shelf it for now and put that in the future projects category.
That one would be cool if you did one of the ones with like the glass front, so you could see what was almost like a snack thing.
Oh
The ones
And
that
that way
dispense
somebody
at
could
the
see
airport
the
now?
art. Do what?
The ones that dispense at the airport are crazy now. You can buy headphones or iPod on them. They don't
I've
make
seen
iPods
Lego
anymore.
vending machines at the
Yeah,
airport where you
they
actually
got
buy big
everything now.
boxes of Lego. That's crazy.
For the longest time, this has been on my list for my wanna make list for at least 8 years, but I've always wanted to recreate one of the Hams beer signs where it looks like the waterfall. There's like a picture of a waterfall and it's moving. There was
Yeah.
this spaghetti place near where we live, and we used to go there all the time to eat, and it had one of those Hams beer signs, and I was just mesmerized by how this thing looked. It looked like magic, and maybe someday I'll make one. I've seen pictures of how it works, and there's kind of
That
like a
with
little conveyor belt in the background.
like a rolling film behind like an image?
Yeah,
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, Jimmy, you had an idea for I think I don't remember who had the idea
A
actually, the
topic.
topic for today.
Well, just projects. In my case, it's the tow truck. Projects or things come and go in your life that are really just designed to be a distraction from your responsibilities, whatever they might be. In this case, I work. I'm working on the shoe. It's been obsessive all week long, working on the boot, and then I'll take a break and run over to the tow truck just for like almost like a little hit of working on to get to a point. So yesterday, well, a couple days ago, I got it running, by the way. This tow truck has been sitting in some guy's yard for years. He got it used and he had it for a year. He says, I think he had it for a lot longer because when he pulled it out of the hole, it was pretty deep in like a ground hole. And He says he only got it started once, but it was like, you know, sunken. And he says he only got it started once, and he says it'll run. And last week I got a new starter, and then the starter didn't work, and then I went and got another starter, and it was a real pain in the butt because when to change the starter, I'm up underneath the truck. It's very heavy because it's the heavy duty. Everything's heavy duty because everything's bigger and stronger. So this big starter, I'm holding it up, making sure I don't drop it on my teeth, trying to get the bolt lined up, and the transmission lines are dripping because I have to disconnect them to get into the same area where the... Anyway, I got the truck started, and I was so excited. I showed it on Instagram. I was so happy that it started because I thought the engine was seized, but it wasn't. So the truck runs great. And the odometer says 43,000 miles, which could be real because the truck runs perfect. And there are various spots in the truck that are like perfectly brand new. And there are other spots that are rotted completely through. The floor where the driver sits is completely rotted through. Like you could see the ground below it. The passenger side, it's not perfect, but all the original factory padding was still in there. I ripped it all out because it was all wet. And the floor is rusty. And then yesterday, I flipped the seat back, and the whole back of the cab is in perfect condition. So, I mean, I think I might have got like a good example of this particular truck. It's a K30 Chevy, K30 83, four-wheel drive, dually, blah, 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 and diesel. And the idea, though, is it's a distraction. That's getting back to the topic. Yesterday, I worked, and then at one point, I'm like, now that I know it runs, I want to drive it, but it's got no brakes, so I got to fix the brake system. So I went yesterday, and I pulled out the brake booster and went to replace it, brought it to my local auto parts store. They're going to have one ready for me today. But what in your life is a distraction, Bob? What is a distraction, Dave? What is a distraction from what you're supposed to be doing, whether it's real or not?
Well, I have a question about this. You're saying distraction, but it sounds like just simultaneous projects. I mean,
I'm not really. I don't think I'll make a video about this, honestly. That's the thing. I'm filming it just for vlog style, and I'm filming not every single aspect of it. I came to a conclusion about car videos because I remember a couple of years ago I tried to do like the restore car video, just the nuts and bolts car video, not necessarily like I'm doing the Cadillac. That's a lot of fabrication, but like a nuts and bolts car video, unless you have a really interesting personality and are extremely smart, which I'm not good at nuts and bolts car videos. So I'm not really thinking that this is going to be either a video or standalone. If I fabricate something for it, I'm going to say, this old tow truck, I got it recovered. That'll basically put that whole video in a sentence. I got this old truck, I got it started. But I'm going to fabricate this thing out of steel and plasma cut. That's the video for me. Versus getting it, dragging it out of the mud. Like I might make a 10-second sequence of those parts. Yeah. And then now this video is about cutting out the floor and replacing that panel. But when it comes to nuts and bolts restoration, unless you have Vice Grip Garage, Derek Barry, who's extremely funny and obviously extremely knowledgeable, I've been watching a lot of 6.2 diesel videos, and they are horrible. Just get to the point where you're talking. These guys try, and a lot of guys try to be Derek because he's extremely funny, and they all talk about how cars smell. And if you don't know Vice Grip Garage, go watch Vice Grip Garage.
Yeah, he's great.
So it's funny to see these guys that came after him trying to be like him. When it's just like, just make the car run. Just get to the point and just tell me what the problem was. But Derek is really charming and extremely funny. So I would never try to compete with that type of video where I'm making a video about pulling it out of the mud and bypassing the gas tank and all that stuff. So I'm not really obsessively filming this. But what each one of the little wins where I figure out like the... Now I'm digging into the hydraulics on the bed of the truck. Each one of these little wins is... It's become, in the last 2 weeks for me, it's become like a little bit of a reward snack in a way, where it's if I get to a goal on the shoe boot or the Cadillac, then I go and spend an hour on the tow truck. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I had a good day. So those type of distractions, and at the moment it's the tow truck, but in the past it's been other stuff, like my Kubota tractor that I'll never make a video on. But when I first got the tractor, I was like trying all the implements, but I'd work for a block of 4 hours, and I'd be like, okay, I need to go play with the tractor now. But I need to reward myself so I don't feel guilty about my distractions.
You know what it sounds like to me? It sounds like a hobby.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, yeah. I get what you're saying. It's a distraction because you're stepping away from something that is work to, like, you know, kind of switch your mind and to be productive on something that doesn't matter as much. It doesn't, like, have to do with a video or whatever. I get that. But that feels like, from my perspective, what a hobby would be if I had hobbies. I don't really have hobbies, but I think that's kind of the same thing. So maybe those words mean the same thing.
Yeah.
But something that means something to you but is not productive in the same way that your work is productive.
And in a way, every project is a distraction from another project.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. My friend came in and says yesterday, he goes, "What's going on with the Cadillac? Can I do it?" I'm like, If it was two of me, Jimmy one would be working there and Jimmy two would be working here. I said, but I have to just shut my brain off from that and work on this because this deadline is looming versus that deadline, which I have an extra month on. So I have to literally just block it out. And the house. And everyone's like, what's going on with the house? I'm like, there's some hurdles I need to do. And we were going to start doing the floor, but now the guy that's doing the chimney is like, I wouldn't do anything extra around the chimney. God forbid I drop a block on. He's climbing higher and higher with rocks around the chimney. He's like, I wouldn't do the floor around here until the chimney's done. He goes, because if you try and put PEX in the floor now, he goes, I'll probably crush it with a rock that drops from 15 feet in the air. He's like, I think you should wait. And he's like, okay. Gives me an excuse to just run and do other things. So the house is, I have a couple of planned objects and things that I have to do for the house, and we're going to start the electric. There's been a start and stop with the electrical partner on the house a little bit, but we have more of a clearer focus of what we're going to be doing, so that's going to come back into play. And then I just picked up a job. I don't know if I said in the beginning of this, I picked up a job for my bullet guys this week. So that's going to be a distraction from the distraction. That's a distraction.
We talked about this, I think, in the after show. I had a comment, like a mean comment a couple weeks ago. But one of the things that was in this mean comment was about how I never finish anything, which I thought was really funny because I finished something in the video that they were commenting this on. But they referenced the Carmagia and, like, I don't remember what the other thing was. But it were things that, like, you don't finish a car in any short amount of time. And it's the same kind of thing with what you're talking about. You have these, like, multiple long-term projects going at the same time. Each one of them has potential for blockage at every turn. And so you can do what you can do on this one, and then you have to wait. So then you switch to this one. And that's why you have, I would imagine, that's why you have all those things going at all those times.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can... redirect to whatever's available and whatever.
Yeah, like Laura says, you got to let glue dry. You got to let epoxy dry.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny that the perception from the other side of the screen is that, at least in my case, that I don't finish anything when actually it's just a matter of, like, what am I able to work on today? Which one of these things can take progress?
What does Dave have there in front of him? What is Dave's distraction?
This was a project that I started, a month and a half ago. It was
the keyboard.
The Casio keyboard, where I was putting a tube amplifier inside and adding all these guitar pedal effects on the inside of it.
Oh, that's right.
And I've got two projects that I've talked about on this podcast that I have not finished because of distractions. So I started this and I started drawing up what I needed to do and I started making the thing and we've filmed part of it. And that is when X-Tool called and said, hey, we have this metal fab machine. It's a laser cut. Bob has one. It's a laser welder and CNC laser cutter for metal. And I was like, oh, I've got the perfect project for this. And so I put it off to the side thinking that machine was going to come within a couple of weeks and I could do even more cool stuff because I can cut real thin metal and make the faces and everything. So I put it aside. And now X-Tool is ghosting me and I'm not sure where if that machine is coming, and so I might have to go back to the original plan of how I was going to do it, but I've been distracted and I already have these cool ideas of what it could be, so it just sits there. And then maybe a month or two before that, I talked about on this podcast, I found this cool old, I think it's a Samsonite suitcase that I gutted, and I was putting, and I cut a drawer for the inside, so it has a, turns into a drawer. The top opens up, and there's be all these little shelves. I haven't finished that because the, for the top part, I had this big 2-inch thick piece of cherry that I was going to carve out some compartments for this top part. But then I needed the cherry for another project that I was working on that had a deadline. And then I haven't gone back to get the replacement cherry. So that project has just sat on the shelf. I already know what I'm going to do. I just don't have the materials. And I do this all the time where I talk about, and this is why I'm not talking, this is why I didn't mention the project that I'm starting tomorrow. Because I don't know if I'll finish it. Because it might not work. I'll probably find another distraction. I need more shop furniture. I just put out a shop furniture video, but I need more. Do I film it? Like, it feels like I'm constantly looking for distractions to, things are always pulling me away. And I, for the little Casio keyboard, I don't mind the distraction because of what is keeping me from doing it is even cooler idea than what I had originally.
Right.
And so now I've built it up to where this is going to be the most cool thing I've ever made, and I can't get to it until all the conditions are right.
But you wouldn't want to back off your idea,
yeah,
and just go with the previous version
because that sounds like a failure ultimate, now.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's interesting. Like, I wonder if creative people value. I think everybody's creative. I don't mean it like that we're a different class of people. I'm not saying that, but people who spend their work on creative pursuits, I wonder if we value progress differently than like something being completed. You know what I mean? Like, to you all, what is more valuable? What do you feel accomplished when something is completed or you've made progress on things?
I think I feel better when something is completed. But
I certainly enjoy the process. I can certainly say I really enjoy the process of anything.
Yeah. I think in like, this is where I think going back to the phone thing, it hurts us because we make our living by sharing what we have accomplished. And sometimes it is really easy to forget that the progress is the reward. Not the finish. And so I am, this is the thing that I struggle with all the time. It's like, oh yeah, I can't share this thing until it's done because it's going to be visible to more people. And I do believe I need to get back into enjoying the process. And it's like, and I do enjoy the process whenever there's a new technique or a new tool or a new material or something new, there's that freshness, and that freshness is always exciting. But going back to another woodworking project where I'm just using the same tools that I've used for the last 10 years, it loses a little bit of oomph. And I think that's part of the creative process for creative minded people. There's got to be that new fresh thing all the time.
Yeah. Now that I'm thinking about it and hearing you all both talk about it, I wonder if so the public presentation of the finished result, I do that too. I don't like to show stuff in progress because it's not the intended outcome, right? But I wonder if by only showing the end result, I limit the amount of enjoyment I could get from sharing, because you keep all of those, like, I value progress, but I keep all of those progressions, like, here, local, hidden, you know what I mean? Nobody gets to see that, oh, yeah, see, I got the thing opposite. Working today.
I share every little aspect of
everything. Well, that's where I was going, is, like, you are prolific with showing
everything.
Every step and every little win and every new experiment and every new...
That's really, you said it, that I was going to say that word. Every little win is... Look what I did. Look at this. Oh, this, yeah. You know what I discovered? I jumped into this not knowing where it was going to go, but this is where I am now. I love that part of it. That's really the big win for me.
And I think I miss out on celebrating those wins by sticking only to the final result. So the things that you're calling distractions, I don't know that they're actually distractions, whether they're, you're looking for opportunities to succeed and to progress on all these different little things at the same time, because that progression, those wins are valuable to you. And it's not necessarily about, yes, I finished the car. Yes, I finished the house, because that doesn't happen very often, but you're focusing on and celebrating the little progressive wins along the way, which is something that I don't do as much.
I think that's the difference between a maker and an artist. And you can be both, and we're all both in some ways, but then there's that balance of the maker really enjoys the process. The artist
it's all generalization. It's hard to
somebody's gonna be like, you're so wrong, and they're right and also wrong.
Well, you know, it is true. I think there is some truth into what you're saying, Dave, because think about, you know, I'm an art lover, and I've studied Picasso and Giacometti and whoever else. But how interesting is it when we often don't see, for instance, the pictures of Giacometti in his studio, or the unfinished sculptures of Michelangelo, you know, the unfinished human figures in the blocks. We don't see that much. We only know them for what their finished parts are.
Yeah.
Which I understand, because if you want to be known for, I mean, Michelangelo would not want to show off a half-done thing, because that would be an inaccurate presentation of his capabilities, right? Mm. It would not be the final, this is what I can do, this is what I set out to do, this is what I did. That's a finished piece of art. And you're showing the final result as, this is the accumulation of wins, of progress over time, and I finally got to the thing that I was trying to get to. If you see it halfway through, you're like, I mean, it's not really there yet. You know, it's not, it's going to look better than this. It's that kind of a thing. So I get that from an artist's perspective. But if you're, like in my case, it's a lot of exploring. It's a lot of like, I don't know if this thing will work. It's not the end of the project, but the next step, I have to figure out if it will work or not. And if it works, that's exciting to me. But I still don't share those for that same Michelangelo reason of like, it's not going to be interesting enough as the full thing is in my mind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know. It's a weird, that's a weird thing I've never really thought about, those, the differences there. But
did you guys ever see the Portlandia episode where the one woman's going around, they're like, oh, I heard your boyfriend makes furniture. Oh my God. Oh. So sexy.
Yes.
and they show up. What is his name? I can't remember the actor.
Fred Armisen.
Fred.
Yeah. Fred. Fred, by the way, Armisen went to SVA with me at the same time. I didn't know it. We had mutual friends. I didn't know it till years later. But Fred Armisen, he plays this guy who's like all stoic with a beard. And he's like, yeah, I make stuff. And he's like all like sexy and cool and like very stoic. And then they hire him to do this piece for the cover of like the local craft magazine or whatever, the town magazine. And he shows up at the photo shoot and what he made is horrible. And
it is awful. It is really.
But they shoot him like, he's so sexy. Oh my God, dude, it is one of the funniest ones they've ever made. And for some weird reason, every time they show him in his shop working, building this thing for the big presentation, all the sounds of the tools are with his mouth, so he's going, which is another level.
I'm going to put it in the show notes.
It's another level of genius. But then when he's at the presentation and all the photographers and all the art directors are looking at him like, how horrible this is. They don't say anything. They just look, and he goes, well, this is going to be like, this is where the leg will be. Like over here is where like there'll be like a back part. I'm not really quite done yet. He just explains away the horribleness of the whole thing, which is so like, good. You didn't see that part of his personality until he shows his final piece, which is so, it was, when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, I could, even though he was done in an extreme goofy level, but how often is that when you show, I show a leather bag, I'm like, well, this isn't really the latch, so I was going to use a different latch, but I couldn't find it. I had to use the one I did. This isn't the right color, but this is the best color I could find. It's unbelievably funny if you haven't seen it.
And there's a difference there, I guess, between like, you know, it's actually not complete, or somebody undercutting their own ability with excuses. So
it's insecurity, you know, and it's everything. Yeah. It's all of it.
That's funny. But yeah, the skit is called The Man Issue from Portlandia. I put a link to it in the show notes so everybody can go check it out.
Right.
It is very funny.
I feel like when we discuss things like this and I talk about my experience and I'm like, oh, I have this mental issue with this and figuring out this and I struggle with this, it probably appears that I'm just struggling all the time with all these things. But actually, I don't think about these things that much until we actually talk about it.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, we hang up the phone here and I go out in the shop and I just look at everything thinking nothing works. Everything sucks. It's just, I just go do what I do. And then I realize later, like, oh yeah, I was struggling with that. I was just involved in the project and didn't realize it.
Yeah. You get heads down and stuff. I mean, that's what most people do. I think we're in the three of us are in the fortunate position where we get to be heads up once a week and we talk to each other about this stuff. And then, yeah, like you're saying, a lot of that stuff, like, oh, I didn't realize I was actually thinking about this kind of in the background. And, yeah. So it does sound like I'm in therapy all the time, but the fact of the matter is I do think about things throughout the week and then I get a chance to talk about them with my friends. So.
For those who can't see the video portion of this podcast, we're all laying down in a chair.
Not one chair, three chairs.
Three chairs. And we're all three therapists and patients at the same time.
Okay, so that should be our next collaborative project, is we all make a different therapy chair that they all lock together so that we're, you know, head to toe and we can all sit there and give each other therapy.
Perfect. I wonder how our making a table is doing.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's in my dining room.
You never sent it?
No, I never got the address. Oh,
gosh.
What?
It's still sitting there.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
It's only been 3 years.
So I know exactly how our maker table is doing.
Yeah.
Gosh. Bob, I've been meaning to ask you, Bob, send me the address.
You've been meaning to for 3 years. I'll send it to you again.
The person who's getting it still doesn't know he's getting it.
No, he knows.
He does?
Yeah.
You told him?
I think so.
I don't think he knows. Well, get his address. I'll send it to him.
We are so organized.
Wow, yeah.
We are so organized.
It's amazing that we all show up at the same time every week, to be honest.
Well, to be fair, when I hopped on the podcast this morning, Jimmy was on the phone with somebody asking, like, hey, am I supposed to be there right now?
I thought I had an appointment with my Chevy dealer to do some tire work on my car. And they're like, nope, we were going to call you. I was like, okay, good. That means I have the whole afternoon to myself. Thank you.
Nice. Any other thoughts on... Go ahead.
No. I know Jimmy gets a lot of excitement when there's that possibility that he's supposed to be committed to something or doing something, and then that commitment goes away, and then it just feels like a free day for you. You talk about this a lot.
Yeah.
And those are little wins for you.
Oh, 100%. Like when, like, the three of us are all have, like, that Mexican standoff, like, we know we don't want to work this week. And we're like, you gotta, and, like, Bob's always like, take the week off. Bob always pulls the trigger. Bob's like, let's take the week off. And we're like, oh, my God. And then I don't tell anybody in my life. And then the Wednesday from 9 to 11 is like, I could do anything. And everybody thinks I'm in the podcast. Nobody bothers me. It's like a black hole in my life when we don't have the podcast, but nobody that knows me doesn't bother me.
In another 25
it's
years.
Like I'm invisible. Actually, it's like I'm invisible.
When we're done with the podcast in 25 years and we decide to not do it anymore, you just don't have to tell any of your friends.
I won't.
And then I'll have that Wednesday morning.
I won't, because nobody I know listens to the podcast. No, nobody in my personal life. Like, I talked to my brother-in-law a couple months ago, and he's like, I'm like, yeah, I do a podcast. He's like, how long have you been doing a podcast? I go, 10 years. He's like, you've been doing a podcast for 10 years and I only just heard about it? I'm like, yeah, I guess so.
Yep.
So that's what it's
and
like.
Bob's entire family listens to the podcast.
Yeah. not the whole family, but a lot of them.
I can honestly say I don't think my mother even knows that I do a podcast. She just knows I'm like social media man. She doesn't understand it. She just goes, oh, that's so beautiful. That's so
sweet. That's cute.
I'm so proud of you. Exactly. Well, any other thoughts on distractions or hobbies or whatever we want to call these things?
I'm reading a book right now. I think it's called Rewire, and they talk about like it's not what the book is about. There's just like a tiny little 1% of the book talks about it. But like having a hobby is for, it's like we're constantly working. We're constantly looking at our phone. You think you're looking at your phone, social media, and you think you're taking a break, but your brain is still processing things. Your brain is taking in, and you're not actually giving yourself a mental break. And that's where hobbies come in, where you get to detach and work at your own pace. And the hobby is a thing that doesn't, for me, it's a thing that doesn't exist in a social media environment. There is no end that I'm sharing. And that, I think that's important when you're self-employed and you work all the time, it is important to detach and slow down and have those little things to look forward to and enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I guess I do have a couple of those things. I mean, I don't think of them as hobbies because maybe they're not, you know, consistent. They're not things that I pursue, really. They're just things that I like, oh,
the things that you do.
The guitars. Yeah, there's things that I do.
I mean, you've been talking about, like, you've been doing, making music with your family, and you've been setting up recording studios and recording songs, and like, and that's not something that you share. That's your hobby. And I'm sure there's other things that you don't even realize you've just been doing for 30 years. And those are your little hobbies, things that you enjoy.
Yeah, that's true. Cool. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters, and you guys can find something to recommend. Huge thanks to everybody on Patreon. So last couple of weeks have been weird. We skipped a week, and then our show went out late, which we knew, and I didn't tell everybody else about that. Brandon, who edits the show, was on vacation, so we knew that the show was going to go out late. But the reason I'm saying that is because it's pretty cool. We got several messages after the second show didn't come out in a row. We got several messages that were like, you know, hey, is everybody all right? Just want to check on you guys. Are you all right? yeah. Nice.
You definitely did not get a message from my mother or my brother-in-law, right?
Yeah, they weren't. But it's really cool that we get messages through Patreon from people like checking on us when, you know, those shows didn't come out. And we get comments and questions and responses and stuff from them all the time. It's a very active group of people. And I don't always respond to those. People who send those, I don't always respond to them, but I always forward them to the other guy. So everybody gets to see them. And, you know, and if I don't respond, it's not that I didn't read it. It's just I don't respond. But we're grateful for those conversations.
I don't always respond to when you forward them too, but just know that I read them, every single one that you forward to me, Bob.
Yeah. Well, I don't care if you read them, but I'm glad they will be glad to know that you read them. But we're really grateful for everybody over at Patreon that supports the show, and they all get the after show regardless of what level they support at or how long they've been supporting. None of that stuff matters. Everybody gets the after show. And that's where we talk about things like Facebook Coke machines and, you know, secret stuff and upcoming stuff and projects that nobody else knows about. It's a separate podcast feed that you only get through Patreon. So you go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up at any level, and then in the top right, I believe, on the screen, there's an RSS feed. You add it to your podcast player, and it shows up like another show. There's also video for the after show. The link is also on Patreon. So if you want that, or if you just want to help us out, you can go to patreon.com/makingit, again, and sign up at any level. But we have a group of people that go above and beyond. They are awesome. So special thanks to Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner. Sean, thank you for your messages and your suggestions this past week. I appreciate it. Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, The New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, Crabtree Creative, Matthias Garnow, and a pretty big deal. But also people like Hunter Voles. Hunter has been there for a while, and we're grateful for everybody at every level. So big thanks to everybody over there.
Thank you, everybody.
Do you guys have anything to recommend this week?
Well, I talked about a couple of people today, but I'm going to recommend Vice Grip Garage again, probably for the fourth time. But in the recovery of the usefulness of this truck, I've been watching a lot of Derek. And when you watch one video that's an hour long, all of a sudden your feed is 17 videos that are an hour long from the same creator.
I don't know how he does it, honestly.
He's insane. He's insane. One thing I want to know, and I could ask him, we're in touch, is how do you hop in a car that's been sitting in a field for so long and then drive 500 miles? What is the insurance registration implications of all that? Does he have a dealer plate that covers all that? Maybe that's it. He just hops in these cars and he's like, well, and then he drives hundreds of miles.
Well?
Yeah. Anyway.
Awesome.
Go check out Derek. He's amazing.
Yeah.
I've got two this week. So I actually created a new private playlist on my YouTube, and it's called Making It Weekly Picks. And so anytime I see a video that could potentially be a pick, I'm just going to throw it in there. So this week
that's a good idea.
Two, yeah. This first one is a guy, it's a studio, John Lehman Studios. And this video is called Building a Bagel Booth in Just 28 Days. And it is, he's making like this big fabricated bagel, styrofoam, epoxy, paint, the whole thing. And he's got a team of people that he works with. I sent you guys one of his videos where he builds a John Wick room.
Oh, yeah.
It is his skill and his team and his videos are just phenomenal. I've never seen a John Wick movie, but I was just sucked into.
What?
Yeah. Kelly loves them. I've never seen a John Wick movie.
They're good.
Anybody who listens to this podcast would probably enjoy these builds. They're so freaking good. So John Lehman. And then this other one is just a quick little video. It was by the Wall Street Journal, and it's just kind of like this little journalistic view of, it's called the $35 guitar pick loved by John Mayer. I didn't even know a $35 guitar pick existed, but it covers this company that makes these expensive picks out of this rare material that some guitar players love, but you get to see the process and the machining that was done. So it's kind of like a little maker video. I personally will not be buying a $35 guitar pick. My skills are not worthy of such, and I'll just stick to the cheap plastic ones that I get for free. But yeah, so those are my two picks.
Cool. One year for Christmas, my sister gave me a guitar pick hole punch, and it was like this big thing like this, and you could put any material you want that it could cut in this thing, and
that's so
clamp
cool.
it down, and it would pop out a guitar pick, and so
library library.
I did old credit cards for a while. Okay. I would just like make a bunch. You know, you get four or five of them, three or four of them out of a single card.
Oh, so. Yes. You know what I do? You want to hear?
Make now?
No, you know what? You want to hear something? What I do? I don't have any in front of me. They're in the kitchen. When I have like Keurig boxes and just random packages that are a chipboard, I have a business card puncher. So I'll cut up a box, a cereal box, and put it through the business card puncher. And I have a whole pile of business card size cutouts. And I got that from Tim Sway. Years ago, Tim Sway was giving out business cards punched out of cereal boxes. And so I have the business card punch in the kitchen, and I recycle all boxes into business cards. I never make them into business cards, but I have a giant pile of cards. I do, eventually. I do. I'll rubber stamp them or something if I'm going on a journey.
Cool.
I love the guitar pick thing, though.
So my pick is, there's actually not a lot of content around this, but I met a guy at this Lego thing this weekend, and he goes by Neat Bricks, and he builds sets and reviews sets and stuff. But the thing he had there was this ingenious Lego sorter, and I've made a couple of them. Different types, like sifters, where you put in a bunch of bricks and then it sifts through different filters, different size, and then, you know, it knocks them down. He made one that was these long, like probably 4 feet long cylinders made out of sections that were all 3D printed and snapped together, and the whole thing rolled. So it was like a tumbler, and on the inside it had a corkscrew flap that would push. As it spun, it would push the bricks from one end to the other.
Oh, that's
but
cool.
All along the way, it had different size holes and was filtering out different size bricks and different shape bricks, not even just different sizes.
Oh, wow.
It was ingenious. And he had three of these of different, so he had like a big one and then a medium and then a small one. And underneath each one of the sections, there was a little bin that was collecting all of the stuff. So he would dump a whole bunch in one end, and this thing would start spinning. It was on a motor, so it would just start spinning, push everything down, filter it out, and then he would take the leftovers, put it in the next cylinder, do it down, put it in the next cylinder. And it got to where at the last cylinder, it was separating. If you think of like a one-by-one Lego brick, they're small.
One dot and by the, one dot, basically.
Yeah.
It's like one dot.
Yeah. But there's different shapes. There are square ones. There are circle ones. There right. are some Deep that ones. Are like heart-shaped. They have one corner and then a curve on the other end. And somehow, yeah. he was able to make geometry that could separate those three into different bins. I don't even understand it. And I talked to him for like 15 minutes trying to understand it, and I didn't get it. So I was fascinated with this. After having done a couple of really rudimentary versions of that, he was like on a cool path. And then he also had an AI, like he had a camera that was running AI and checking out bricks and separating them out into a different little thing. Like, it was crazy. But he said he was going to be doing some long form video content about building this whole thing and how it works and stuff. So go check out Neat Bricks if you're at all interested. You guys got anything else for this week?
Mm-hmm. Nope.
I'm sorry, I was distracted. What?
Do you have anything else for this week?
No.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, including Jimmy's mom and
my brother-in-law.
Thank you.
You got to tell your mom that you love him.
I love him, Mom. My mom just turned 85 the other day.
Oh.
And she's in perfect good health. And my mom's like, amazing. You wouldn't know she was a day over 70. She's amazing.
Awesome.
The day this podcast comes out, I'll be 50.
I mean,
whoa.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. Wow. I remember when you were just like a little 40-year-old baby.
Yeah. Not too long ago.
Wow. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
Amazing. Incredible.
50 years without eating a taco.
Oh.
We're going to change that.